Happy 2023, Geordie. First podcast of the year for both of us. I am really looking forward to it, but welcome back. Happy New Year and Happy New Year to all of our listeners. I know you've done some, Geordie, but I haven't done one yet this year that I can think of. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And yeah, I hope you stick around for what's going to be a really awesome year.
First podcast of the year, Loz. Tell us, what have you been up to? What's been going on?
I guess over the Christmas period, just did a lot of chilling out, which was really nice. Did some training. Hoped that I was going to do a little bit more training because I unfortunately broke my toe just a couple of days after Christmas. So spent a little bit of my break on the couch. But my swimming is getting really good because I've been swimming. The riding's going okay and probably going to start introducing some runs. But I've got my first try coming up in 2 weeks because I was meant to do one the other week, but I broke my toe. So I just did the swim, which was still a cool experience. And then, yeah, just training and now back to work. And we're getting, yeah, everything ready for a busy UFC Perth that's coming up in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's a good little segue. I'll use that swim training to introduce what we're going to be talking about today. And if people are listening and they are fans of the endurance world, they'll definitely hear of this event. I'll let you introduce it, Loz, because it's quite an iconic event within Australia. Not only is it iconic, it has some very, very interesting challenges when it comes to nutrition. And that's something we want to dive in because I've known about this event for a long, long, long time. And the thought of even fueling someone do it is quite daunting, right? And very fortunately, we've had an athlete that's doing it. And I'm going to let you go through, Loz. What are we talking about? And let's break down why is it so daunting to be fueling this event?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so we're talking about open water swimming nutrition and in particular the Rottnest Channel swim. So yeah, for those of you who don't know what this event is, it's a 20-kilometer open water swim that's held every year in WA from Cottesloe Beach on the mainland over to Rottnest Island, which is a little island 20 kilometers off the coast. So yeah, as you mentioned, it's probably one of WA's most iconic sporting events, and it's been happening every year since 1991. All of these crazy people decide I'm going to become shark bait for the day and swim across the open ocean and hope to make it there in one piece. So it's obviously a huge swim. People can either do it in teams of four, teams of two, or as a soloist. And yes, this one person we're referring to is doing it as a soloist. So obviously that is going to be a big feat that we're fueling. But yeah, pretty much enabled to be able to do a swim like this. The athlete either needs to have done it previously or qualify at a 10-kilometer open water swim race with a particular time of less than 4 hours and 15 minutes. So not just anyone can do the swim, which is good for safety reasons. Obviously, Geordie, I probably can speak for yourself and me in saying that we could not just hop in the water and make it across. We definitely are grateful that those practices are in place. But yeah, so a huge 20-kilometer swim and yeah, currently working with someone and it's been a huge learning curve because as far as I'm aware, there's not many people out there that kind of work with open water swimmers and it seems to be quite a niche area. And yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today is how do you actually fuel an open water swim event?
I think adding on top of that too, Loz, obviously I get this reaction a lot doing a lot of ultra endurance marathons and running events. When you tell people, people are very, very familiar with running distances. A half marathon is 21 Ks. And for a lot of people, that's really far. And then you say, oh, I ran a marathon, 42 Ks. That's really far. But then you talk about, oh, I ran 50 kilometers or 100 kilometers, or I ran 160 and 100 mile. And they're like, oh my God. I think when we're on land and because we're driving around a lot, I think we have just a better innate sense of distances, right? Like you can kind of conceptualize like, oh, 42 Ks is far, but 100 Ks is really, really far. Can you kind of give us a bit more insight of how far this really is? Because if you're not a swimmer and you're listening to this, you're probably not realizing just how insane these distances are that this athlete's doing.
Yeah, I think you explained that perfectly because it's so true. We're so impressed by, oh, wow, marathon 42Ks, ultra marathon. Yeah. But typically in the swimming world, a marathon swim is anything over 10 kilometers. So pretty much the crossing from Perth to Rottnest is, two marathon swims in one go. And yeah, I guess to put that into perspective for people that maybe don't swim in the open water, but they're familiar with the pool, 10 kilometers is around 400 laps in a pool. Sorry, 20 kilometers is around 400 laps in a pool. So, these athletes that are swimming over to Rottnest Island, someone could be in a pool and just ticking over 400 laps slowly. And I think I would probably go insane if I had to do 400 laps. So it is a huge swim, and I think people don't realize that how insane, swimming these distances are. I actually can't remember, but is the English Channel, is that 34Ks or something, Geordie? The one in Europe?
Yeah, off the top of my head, it's in the 30s, definitely.
Yep. Yeah. But I think, as far as I'm aware, this is definitely one of Australia's biggest and most iconic, open water swim events. There's also Port to Pub, which is a very similar event, but it's 25 kilometres. So again, even further. But yeah, I suppose in today we're talking mostly about, the Ronness Channel swim, and there's obviously a lot of considerations that need to go into any type of sport. But with swimming, there's a couple of different rules that obviously make things hard. And one is that when these swimmers are out in the ocean, they actually can't hop onto the boat, touch a kayak or anything like that to receive their nutrition, or to receive anything, first aid, anything like that. So for this whole time, they're also treading water. So that's obviously one of the biggest things that we've had to consider, because if you're doing an ultra marathon, you can stop in at an aid station, maybe sit down, tie your shoelaces, have a drink, maybe have a quick nap. But for these open water swims, the swimmer is not allowed to touch a boat. Or receive any kind of assistance, unless obviously they need to be pulled out of the water.
Yeah, it's an insane concept, right? Because I think about all the low times I've had in ultra marathons, right? And those lows get pretty low, and you feel like you're sinking in your own mind or sinking in your own breath almost. But at least you're on land, right? And like Lord said, you can kind of slow down. You can walk. You can even sit down. Sitting down is probably not recommended when you're doing an ultra. Everything locks up, but the option is there, right? When you're out in the ocean, not so much an option. And then when you have to receive your nutrition, you're treading water. You're getting that. It just presents so many interesting challenges. And I want to dive into that because there's a lot of cool learnings that come that a lot of other athletes can probably pick up from this, but just about more so about being dialed in with your nutrition and really taking your sport specific needs into account. So, Loz, talk us through what are some of the things that you found when you first started working with this athlete, getting them ready for this huge feat?
Yeah, definitely. I think, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's very niche, and obviously, I work with a lot of endurance athletes, but I've not yet worked with someone doing open water swimming. Being involved and, coming down to the events, watching it, listening to people speak, I think something that I realized is a lot of people have no idea what they're doing. And that's pretty fair, because if you look online, there's some wishy-washy information, as with everything. But I think, people either don't know what they're doing, or people kind of talk amongst themselves of, oh, hey, this is what I think, or this is what I read on a blog, or this is what worked for me. And then, people just kind of start doing whatever the other person's doing. And as a dietitian, I think it's kind of that crucial, everyone is individual. You need to have your own plan of attack. That's definitely something that I've realized because of a bit of a lack of information and guidance. I think as well, you really have to think outside the box and be creative with this, because as we've just mentioned, these people are just treading water for the whole time. So how are you going to give them nutrition? What does that nutrition look like? You don't want to give them like a soggy sandwich that, you accidentally dropped in the water on the way to handing it to the athlete. And, having to really, okay, step outside the box of what a normal athlete on land or, walking through an aid station would be able to have, but kind of taking that out and thinking, okay, how do we make all of this happen? And how do we make an athlete reach their nutritional goals whilst they're, 10 kilometers offshore in the middle of the ocean? So I think one of the biggest things I learned is actually just really having to get creative. And something that I've seen is, I should have posted a photo for you to see, Jordy. It's quite funny, but a lot of people, they kind of come up with these DIY contraptions, and it's a like a broom pole or something. They break the broom off, or it's just a, a random stick, and they kind of drill like a cup holder onto the end of it. So it's like a cup holder on a stick, and the paddlers or the boats, they hand out these sticks with like a water bottle in it for the athlete to grab, right? Because they're not allowed to grab the boat or the paddle. So again, coming up with really creative ways like that. With the Roto Solo crossing, the swimmer will have a support boat, and they'll also have a paddler. So typically, the nutrition will stay on the boat, gets passed to the paddler. The paddler will then give it to the athlete. But again, the athlete isn't able to touch the boat, or while they're having a drink, lean one arm up on the boat or anything like that. So yeah, I think having to be creative was probably one of the biggest things I've learned, and kind of makes it fun. There's really no rules. You've just got to get what needs to be done by any means possible, really.
Before we dive into the actual nutrition and what you fed it, like obviously there's some real considerations there. I know with running, there's like legit safety considerations, right? And there's logistics of running, of eating, like how do you take in your nutrition? What do you do to your breath? How do you physically unpack it? You got to make sure everything has easy access. There's all these extra things that you never think you need to know until you have to do it. And a lot of people don't talk about that. I'm assuming there are a lot of them. When you were planning out the initial stages, like what were the initial challenges that you found for this open water swim?
I think actually one of the big struggles at the beginning when we was kind of coming up with this nutrition plan was obviously, you know, as a dietitian, you want to do evidence-based practice and kind of base your judgment as well on, you know, what's in the research and kind of recommendations and everything like that. And there's some pretty clear ones in terms of, you know, 90 to 120 grams of carbs, all that type of stuff is all well and good. But I was thinking, okay, well, we still need to make sure these guys are hydrated, but we don't really know if they're sweating, you know, what their sweat rate's going to be because they're encompassed in a body of water, right? So it's kind of thinking, okay, are there different differences in terms of like how we actually determine their nutritional requirements because of the conditions? Obviously, I know if you're swimming, you know, you still, there is still sweat losses that are happening, but it's not as obvious as, you know, if someone's just going for a run. So it's also trying to think, okay, are there different kind of requirements for these athletes? And I think another one was just really trying to get, once those, you know, once I kind of came up with, all right, I think this is going to be good for you, is how do we get it in, really? Because it's awkward, you know, you don't want to waste too much time in intervals, you know, you don't want to strength too much and then have to be horizontal for another 20 minutes. But also just trying to think, okay, how can we make, you know, this athlete get carbs, electrolytes, fluids, all those types of things in as condensed kind of, in a condensed manner, in a way. I don't know, there was a lot of kind of umming and ahhing, going back and forth, doubting myself, but you know, throughout this whole process we've been practicing it, and that's the same with every endurance athlete, is practice it in training. Every training session is a chance to practice nutrition. So I think by doing that, getting into constantly trial feedback to me how it's going, we were able to overcome those issues and in determining really what is right for this individual.
So let's go through what type of things, or what are the nutrition strategies that you guys have been practicing throughout? Give us some numbers and then how do you put those numbers into practice?
Yeah, for sure. So pretty much we're aiming for around 85 to 90 grams of carbs an hour based on this is what he's able to stomach and to tolerate during training. And it's also achievable in the kind of timeframes that we were hoping to do the feeds. Around, I think, you know, 300, 400, 500 milligrams of sodium an hour, just in terms of still getting a decent level in, because this athlete has a history of cramps and it's a really heavy sweater on land. So obviously, yes, this athlete's going to be immersed in salt water, probably going to be swallowing quite a bit of salt courtesy of the ocean, but still really important to consider that hydration, as well as still getting liquid in. So I think it works out to be around 750 mils an hour, which is, to be honest, pretty consistent with maybe what this person would have on land, obviously a little bit less, but that's just what's worked really well over time, has built it up from kind of not really having much during training to consistently having something every pool session, every beach session. And they've done a couple of 10 kilometer races. So every race we've used as a chance to practice the nutrition, because, you know, if you're in the pool, you do feel a little bit dorky, like standing at the wall, having a gel or anything like that, because people don't obviously know how long you're in the pool for, but, you know, obviously using those big training sessions or practice events as a chance to really fine tune this plan has been really helpful. And it's just kind of, I think it's perfect because he's able to finish the swim with really good energy, doesn't feel a crash at all throughout. And at the end of the day, it's just what really works well for the athlete based on their feedback and based on their performance.
So what are some of those food options that the athletes have, and say if they're having during it, like what are the types of gels? Are you using whole food sandwiches? What are you using?
Yeah, for sure. So mostly doing fluids. So in terms of like some electrolyte drinks or electrolyte carb mixes, we're also doing gels in water. So that's something that I'd never heard of before. If I'm being totally honest with you, before this whole Rottnest Channel swim preparation, I'd never heard of people putting their gels into water. And I was a little bit apprehensive at first, but seems to work really well. So then one of the other rotations is we'll put some gels into water. So apparently it's quite hydrating as well, because it's obviously not as salty as the electrolyte drink. So we kind of do a rotation of, yeah, electrolyte carb mixes, gels in water, gels on their own, and also some kind of jam and Nutella sandwiches, just as well, so that you have that variety, because you don't want to have palate fatigue, you know, just constantly smashing the same thing for however many hours this event's going to go for. The variety was kind of created in terms of, one, it meets their nutritional requirements, and two, it prevents that fatigue, and three, because we have it in a rotation. So it's like option one, option two, option three, option one, option two, option three, kind of helps the swimmer to understand, okay, a bit of a time frame, and like, oh yes, I know I'm getting this next, or oh yes, I know I'm getting this. So kind of like that mental simulation as well, I think, in terms of, I'm not just having, oh great, I'm just having, you know, blue Powerade again, oh great, blue Powerade again, but it's also keeping them excited as well.
Was that the biggest challenge that you found, was the palate fatigue, or was it just finding things that they were enjoying, or did you ever experience any stomach upset, or what were that like?
No stomach upset, thankfully, which is really good. It's more so, yeah, just the palate, I suppose, yeah, palate fatigue. And because they are getting quite a lot of salt water in the mouth throughout the whole event, you know, having something that seems really, you know, hydrating and sweet is a really nice contrast to that salty water. So sometimes not always just smashing an electrolyte beverage, because obviously that has sodium in it as well. I think, yeah, switching it up with the gels or, you know, the jam sandwiches just gives that nice kind of little reprieve for something sweet.
So what about not the race nutrition, like not what you're practicing in the pool? Were there anything that you had to consider just for the general day-to-day diet, or is it the same that you'd recommend for an endurance athlete? How did you go about that?
Pretty similar in terms of, yeah, general endurance athlete, just making sure obviously they're eating enough to fuel their needs, and obviously prioritizing that pre-training nutrition, obviously intra-training nutrition as we've discussed. But yeah, just generally having a, yeah, really balanced whole food diet, but quite high in carbohydrates due to the high training load, and just, yeah, tailoring it based on the daily training load.
Going to throw this one out of left field at you, Loz, just because I know all the swimmers I work with often ask me about this body composition and swimming. And I think when you look at swimmers, obviously it's a sport where there's a lot of focus on your body, right? Like, yeah, you don't have your shirt on, there's a lot of focus on the body. Open water swimming is interesting too, especially that we mentioned the English Channel swim. And we're talking about earlier about doing ice baths or fair, and how having a little bit extra body fat probably helps that process. Is that something that you take into account when you're thinking about these type of athletes?
It is something that's come up quite a lot, actually, in terms of, you know, even before I answer that question, when you go to the pool or you see people doing these open water swim events, they're generally kind of that older, middle to older age, you know, probably don't really look like your typical athlete. But these are the types of bodies that really perform quite well in the ocean, because, as you've said, obviously it gives that added insulation. And I think the body comp managing the body composition one is kind of that, okay, well, they obviously got such a high training load, naturally they're probably going to have quite a slim physique, but then also, you know, making sure that they are fueled enough so that they don't fall into those super low body fat percentages. I think this athlete's done really well to maintain a pretty stable weight throughout the whole preparation. But I have seen many other people kind of, as their training load has increased, their dietary intake hasn't. And as such, obviously body weight, body fat percentage does decrease, which I don't think obviously is going to help too much. But again, I think it's one of those ones as well. Some people don't like to budge in terms of, oh, I don't want to eat too much and get fat. So it's also just juggling that mental side, and also respecting, I think, the athlete's kind of preferences and priorities as well. But from a health perspective, I think, yeah, having a little bit of added insulation definitely doesn't go astray in these types of events, because, you know, we can talk about it, Geordie, but one of the biggest challenges, I think, with open water swimming that people probably don't realize is the risk of hypothermia. So in Australia, you know, we don't have as cold water temperatures as someone in swimming the English Channel. However, when you're submerged in a large body of water for hours, you know, it takes swimmers up to 10 hours to do this runner's channel swim. You know, your body is trying constantly to try and maintain an internal temperature that obviously requires a lot of energy as well. So I think, you know, having that extra body fat is really good in terms of managing hypothermia. Something that I've done, implemented with this athlete, is kind of like a hot drink every now and then, just to try and, obviously it's not going to, you know, flick the switch and body temperature is going to skyrocket up. However, it's doing a really good job at helping to kind of maintain a reasonable core body temperature, also be quite soothing. And I think, you know, I've listened to a couple of other swimmers that like to have tea, whether it's tea, coffee, hot chocolate, mocha, all of those types of things. We, in particular, we do a mocha. So, you know, some chocolate, bit of coffee, bit of milk, just as well. You know, it's not necessarily going to meet their nutritional needs at that aid station, but it helps to kind of warm up core body temperature and also provide a little bit of a break from the cold and help to manage, yeah, the hypothermia risk.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting compared to other endurance events and other athletes in general. So, Loz, if you were to summarize your top priorities when it comes to open water or long distance swimming in terms of their nutrition, what would you say?
I'd say, yeah, one is probably consider the hypothermia risk and try and incorporate a warm beverage if you can. Another one would also be, you have to obviously tackle the environmental conditions. So, for example, swell, in addition to the core, but sorry, the water temperature. And a lot of people struggle with motion sickness. So a lot of swimmers either take like a Quell or an anti-nausea tablet. But if you're feeling nauseous, you're feeling sick, that's a huge barrier to actually taking in nutrition. So whether you take something beforehand, or again, you've trialed your nutrition to make sure it doesn't make you feel sick, obviously is something really important. And then I think, yeah, coming up with a nutrition regime that's suited to you and not your friend or not your coach or not your coach's wife's friend's sister who did it 20 years ago and made it across. But I think, you know, there's a lot of white noise with the open water swimming because people love to help each other, which is great. But, you know, come up with your own kind of goals that you've determined either by yourself or with a dietitian, and set little intervals, whether you're going to feed every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, and try and stick to that and stick to a plan for as long as you can so that, you know, you're prepared come the race.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's wrap that one up there. Very, very interesting episode. Very, very interesting and unique nutritional requirements. But like Lois says, very much shows the importance of being sport specific. One, understanding the sport. And then two, getting some external advice to make sure, even if you do understand the needs, well, what can we do to physiologically put your body in the best position for you to perform, given all of those conditions? And that's very, very difficult. And, you know, I've gone through a lot with myself. So has Loz in our own sport. When we're going, moving into different sporting areas, there's a lot of trial and error, right? And it always, always, always helps to have other people look at it and go, you know what? Let's try this. Let's try that. And put all of that within the framework of the physiological principles that we know work within this endurance nutrition realm.
Definitely. And I think if I can add one more to that kind of recommendation, I think we say it a lot, but you need to practice your nutrition. You know, you spend so many hours, obviously, practicing your swimming and putting hours in the pool, but you could benefit, you could have so many benefits if you actually use that time as well to practice your nutrition. And I think that's been the biggest, you know, I suppose, predictor of success for our athletes. They've committed to training it, you know, not just in pool sessions, but open water swim sessions, you know, 10 kilometer races, 5 kilometer races. Every single event has been a chance to practice nutrition and train the gut. And that's going to be so helpful for anybody listening, whether they do swimming, they do running, they do, you know, long distance cycling, anything like that. One of the biggest priorities of any endurance nutrition, I think, is training the gut and training your nutrition.
Yeah, could not agree with that more. All right, let's wrap that one up there. Loz, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Jordy.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We have just launched our brand new course on our TFD Performance Hub, The Complete Guide to Creatine, where Dr. Scott Forbes breaks down literally everything we currently know about creatine so that you can make the most of this wonder supplement. If you use the link in the show notes, you'll also get 45% off your purchase. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.